Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Jiggle. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let it bump. Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Teacher People, the podcast that helps you know your teachers as people. I'm very excited to welcome the guest for this month's podcast to the studio today, Miss Erin Dillon. Miss Dillon, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We are excited to hear from you. Obviously, we know that you have a lot of big things going on in your life right now, and I don't know how much you let your students in on those things or not, but the elephant in the room, so to speak, is the fact that you'll be leaving us for a little while later on in the year because you're going to be having your first child.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to hide now. The kids now, they're smiling at me now in the hallways like, oh, when are you expecting code for you look big?
Okay.
Yeah.
So they know and they're aware. So do you know yet the gender of your baby?
Yes, it's a girl.
Okay. How did you feel about that when you found that out?
I was less than enthused. Most of my family wanted a boy just because we have so many girls in our family as it is. So I was really hoping for a boy, and Andrew, my husband, wanted a girl really bad, so he was the only one. So he was ecstatic that we found out it was a girl, and I just laid there and I was like, of course it's a girl. Of course it is.
Well, I'm sure you'll be thrilled when you see her for the first time.
Yeah, it's growing on me now.
Okay. How do you feel in general about the idea of starting this new chapter in your life? This is a huge change. Are you excited? Are you nervous? What would you say you're feeling right now?
I think I'm really excited. I'm also nervous, but I think it's time. Like, Andrew and I, my husband, we've been together for 16 years now, married for 3. So I think it makes sense for us as the next step, but I'm really looking forward to just having a different life experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be good.
So to hear you say that, 16 years with Andrew before your marriage, that means you guys were dating. When did you start?
Early sophomore year of high school.
Okay, so it's been a while. You've been through a lot of different life changes together and different steps of your life. I'm curious, what was it like when you guys were dating for the first time? Like, what was your relationship like in high school? Is it kind of like it is now, or do you think that it was different back then when you were a lot younger?
Well, before we even started to date, I hated him, actually. We did not get along at all because we just ran with different friend circles. And then I ended up playing volleyball with his sister my freshman year. So I got to know him through his family, and he would come to all of her volleyball games. So I saw him there. So I got to know him. And then we've just always been best friends first, and that's never really changed. We've always been really close. And I think that obviously, like, as you get older, your priorities change and you become more mature. So our relationship has changed a lot, but in the sense that he's still my best friend, that will never change.
And who made the first move? Like, how did the first date happen?
Of course he did.
Okay.
Of course he did. No, I mean, we were so young, so we couldn't afford to go on dates or anything like that. And we were both so busy with sports because Andrew was a tri-sport athlete and I played 2 sports. So for us, it was more just, we hung out when we could see each other during the day, and then we would go support each other at our sporting events at night. And then we would spend a lot of time with our families too, with each other. So we didn't necessarily like go on dates because we were too broke, but we just enjoyed spending time with each other.
And do you think you guys from that early age had a sense that this was like a long-term sort of thing? Did you see yourself potentially marrying him even when you were back in high school, or did it take a little while for you guys to grow into that realization?
I think a lot of high schoolers feel like they're with their partner for life in high school. So I felt that way. And then when we went to school, we stayed together for a year. And then we ended up breaking up our sophomore year, which I think was the biggest growth moment for us, not just necessarily as a couple, but as individuals as well, because I think our identities were interlocked together in high school because we were together through basically our whole high school experience. So I didn't really know who I was outside of dating Andrew Dillon. Same for him. And so for us to be able to take some time apart and like figure out who am I separate of this other person was really powerful. And then we got together like 8 months after that.
That sounds like a really healthy way to process that, and something that could have been devastating or really hard. Just, I like that perspective. I think that's great.
Yeah, I think it was really good for both of us. And even reflecting now, I think it was such a good decision. I think that if we tried to power through, we probably wouldn't have made it long term. So I think it was really healthy for both of us.
Interesting. So you mentioned that you've been, athletics have been a part of your life. And I think you said you played volleyball at Lincoln High, obviously. I don't know if I caught, did you play other sports for the school or did you enjoy playing other sports yourself?
Yeah, so I played softball at Lincoln as well. And then I played soccer all the way up until high school. I played for 13 years. It was like my primary sport. And then I just think it became a little bit too much for me and I just didn't enjoy it quite as much. So I really wanted to focus on sports that I love to play and I wanted to go to every day. And so that just happened to be volleyball and softball in high school.
So what was your biggest asset as an athlete? Like, is there something about you that made you excel or stand out against other competitors?
I would say that I'm very competitive. And with that, I think I had a different sense of leadership. And I think I was in a unique situation because I did go to Lincoln High School, so we weren't a successful program in volleyball. Softball, my senior year, we were very successful, but that was really the only success that I saw in athletics there. So it was really interesting for me, and I think it also helped shape like who I am as a coach as well, because you can still be an exceptional athlete in programs that aren't successful if you can stick to who you are as a player. And for me, that was, I had a really competitive drive and I had a really great sense of leadership. So,
And you, was IPSY in the same, was Lincoln in the same conference as Chelsea when you were playing?
Yeah.
So you competed against Chelsea High School in the same building that you're now teaching?
Yes.
Do you have any memories of playing against Chelsea, whether in volleyball or softball?
I have a lot of memories about about playing against Chelsea. Most of them are not great in terms of score for us. I actually have some really good memories. So for volleyball, I played against Laura Cleveland, who I replaced with the varsity job. So that was really cool being able to work with her on the same side and kind of picking her brain and learning a lot from her. So that was a really cool situation. And then a funnier note, for softball, I was not a pitcher. I had pitched a little bit my sophomore year, and I really didn't like it, but I was tall and I was athletic, so sometimes I would have to pitch occasionally. But I was a second baseman and a first baseman primarily. And in our game, our pitcher went down with an injury when we were playing Chelsea in the second inning. So my coach looked at me and he said, "Moff, you're in." And so I was like, okay, I haven't pitched in over 2 months, but I'll give it a whirl. And Chelsea, they were, I don't know if they went on to win the states that year or whatever, but they were good. My uncle was the coach at the time, so he was coaching Chelsea, and I pitched my heart out, but my ERA was like 20 at the end of that game. He just was sending them around like home runs after home runs, and I just looked at my coach, and I was like, "Coach, I'm throwing strikes. They're just right down the middle." But yeah, it was really fun. Like, no mercy for my uncle, but I didn't expect it either. I'm the same way.
I think they call that pitching to contact.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It was like borderline T-ball. We were just missing like the stand for it.
Okay. Well, you learn a lot through situations like that.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of character to keep stepping up and making the next pitch, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. I mean, it was a good story. It's something looking back on, I can say, like, I just kept going. Like, you know, it didn't faze me if they hit a home run. You just got to keep going for your team because that's what we needed.
Well, as part of Teacher People, what we do for the podcast is we invite the guest each month to bring to the table the same sorts of warm-up options that I present to my AP language students at the beginning of each hour. So on Mondays in my class, we listen to a song by a musician or an artist. On Tuesdays, we watch a trailer for a TV show or a movie. Wednesdays are our Wednesday World, where we discuss a current event. Thursdays are Throwback Thursday, where we talk about some sort of memory from our past. And Friday is always the question of the day, just an open-ended question to get us thinking. And I've invited Miss Dillon to bring the same things to the table today. So for our Monday music, I'll let you tell us a little bit about what we're going to be hearing.
Yeah, so picking a song was kind of difficult for me because I'm more of like a mood person. Like, I really like to listen to music that matches like how I feel. So a certain song doesn't necessarily always capture how I feel. So typically I listen to like genres, which happens to be a lot of like R&B, could be rap depending on if I'm in volleyball season or not, maybe country. But the particular song that I brought today was, it's called Getting Good by Lauren Elena, which is a country song. And I just really love, first of all, I love her voice, and I really like the message in the song as well.
Okay, great. Well, here is Getting Good by
Lauren Elena.
Once I fall in love, then I'll be happy. But then you fall in love and there's still a hole. Once I get some money, it'll all be easy. But then you get that money and still feel broke. Once I get a little older, I won't worry. When you get older and it don't feel like it should, I'm thinking once I learn to grow right where I'm planted, maybe that's when life starts getting good. Once I get a car that don't stall in the morning, I can make it anywhere, I won't just wait. But I can see it right now, sitting in my driveway, afraid if I take it out, I'll chip the paint. Once I get a house that I can hang my hat on, I bet I'll wanna build a bigger one if I could. Once I learn to grow right where I'm planted, maybe that's when life starts getting good. Oh, getting good. Getting good. Life starts getting good. I'm thinking maybe that's when life starts getting good. I was thinking about what hasn't happened yet, but will someday. And we hang up the phone before I know it. I'm crying over the conversation my fear took. I'm thinking once I learn to soak up every moment, I'll realize my life's already good. Already good.
That was Lauren Elena with Getting Good, and I just shared with you, that was the first time I've ever heard that song, and I thought, for one, I really like the message of that song, the grow where you're planted.
Yeah.
That's an old Mark Mundrosism. I know he used to talk to our team about that idea as well, so I appreciate that. I think that's kind of a universal theme or experience that a lot of people always feel like, if I can just get here or get this, I'll be fulfilled, but it doesn't ever really work that way. That
right.
Target keeps moving further and further on, or we get it and it doesn't really satisfy us in the way we thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious for you, putting you on the spot here, do you think there's anything in your life that you could say sort of applies to that idea, like where you learned that lesson, or something that you always thought you wanted and saw as the end goal, but then came to realize that that wasn't ultimately it?
Yeah, I mean, I think... we could talk about it in terms of like, we just bought a house. Like, we were building a house and then we got it, and then you still have to pay for a lot of stuff to go in the house, mm-hmm. which is something that we're still struggling with. Yeah, like, we don't really have that much furniture, but it's something that will come with time. But I think too, that's like a really simple example, but I just think in general, I've always been a really simplistic person. Like, it doesn't really take that much to make me happy. I just try to figure out where I'm at today and then decide if that's who I want to be tomorrow, or if I want to maybe improve who I was today for tomorrow. But I think too, like, definitely in high school, you always have these huge dreams, and then you realize that, you know, you don't have to be a millionaire to be happy. I'm nowhere near making crazy amounts of money. I'm probably at the opposite end of that. But I am perfectly happy with my life and where I'm at. And that doesn't mean that I can't grow or change or try to improve where I am. But at the same time, it doesn't take a lot to make me happy. So,
yeah, that's great. I like that perspective. And it makes me think, too, about how sometimes it can be nerve-wracking to be in the in-between phase where you're trying to get somewhere, but you're not quite there yet, or you don't see the path forward. And I know, especially working around high school students who are getting ready to make this big leap, whether to their working life or life in college or something like that, there are a lot of conversations about how do I get there? How do I make that leap? Or when's it going to happen? Or even just students having general anxiety about not knowing where they want to go after high school or what they want to do, and thinking that when I get there, everything will be fine and my life will be in order. And I always try to remind students of something that I read in a book called Letters to a Young Poet by Rainier Marie Rilke. And it's this really amazing passage where he talks about loving the questions in your life and realizing that the answers aren't going to satisfy you. Even if you knew the answers, they might not be what you needed at that given time, that you just need to be content with where you're at and trust that. I think the phrase he uses is you'll live your way into the answers someday. And I've always tried to remind myself of that too, that we can't always have everything laid out right in front of us, and it's not always easy, but there are still manageable ways to make it through those situations in our lives.
Yeah, I really like that.
Is that so you've heard the song more times than I have. Do you think, is my interpretation right? Is that what you take from a song like that? Or are there other aspects of that song that you like or make that one stand out?
I think you're spot on, and I completely agree. I mean, it goes with the old expression, like the grass isn't always greener. And I think for me too, the song came out earlier in the fall, and it was kind of perfect timing for me with like volleyball and then teaching. Sometimes I get really overwhelmed by the big picture, and I lose sight of like the little wins that I have in my life. So I liked listening to that song occasionally during season because it always reminds me that like, even though maybe I'm not exactly where I need to be, I can still be happy in who I am and what I'm doing, and then keep working towards that overall goal. Mm-hmm.
And that song was a first for Teacher People. That was the first song from the country music genre.
Oh, nice.
I know country can be a divisive genre. Like, some people love it and some people absolutely hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly you're a fan of it, or at least of some of it. I'm curious for you, how do you respond to the country haters out there that kind of maybe trash the music or say that it's always the same sort of song over and over, or even someone like myself who's not necessarily a big country fan? Like, what would you say are the selling points of the music for you?
I think that it's something that, you know, country music might be repetitive in the message, but it's also relatable. Like, it talks about struggles in life. It might talk about farming, which I don't really get because I'm not a farmer. But there are, like, gems in country music, like Lauren Elena's song, that is very relatable to people. And I think that country music is also changing. And even though I'm not, like, a strong advocate for country music, I really started listening to it when I moved to Charleston. So, again, it was, like, a cultural thing because down there that's primarily what they listen to. And so I just started listening to it, and I found different songs or artists that really appealed to me, or maybe I just like the message or the beat of the song. And then now it's just something that I listen to, you know, occasionally.
Okay, well, that all makes sense. And I can definitely see how you're the sort of person that might like country music.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear you say that you're a hip hop fan, that's a little more surprising to me, because I don't necessarily pin you to the maybe stereotypical hip-hop fan. And I know it even went so far as a few years ago, you made me a playlist of hip-hop songs that you had to tell me, like, a warning about all the foul language that was on it and just how inappropriate a lot of the music was. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have expected that coming from a person like you. How did you become a hip-hop fan?
Well, again, I think it has to do with where I grew up and like my influences. So I went to Lincoln High School, so hip hop was really huge and R&B was really big when I was in high school and middle school. So and then for sports too, I think like if I'm warming up for a game or if I'm working out even now, I'm not going to listen to country music. And I'm always going to turn on like Lil Wayne when he was good, you know, 10 years back. I mean, he's still good now, just to say that. But you know, when he was my genre, like, or my age back then, like, he was really, really good. Or I'll listen to, like, old school Jay-Z or Eminem. And I just really, I appreciate that although like their music might be inappropriate, I can appreciate that they're lyricists, especially Eminem. Like a lot of his songs are about his life and they're poetic. And even though, like, again, it might be, you know, explicit language, it's still something that I can't relate to personally, but I can appreciate.
Hmm. Who are some of your other artists that you admire? You mentioned a few there, but do you have any that are in heavy rotation right now for you?
I like Kendrick Lamar. I think he's still relevant. I like Post Malone a lot, which he's kind of, he raps, but he also is a little bit R&B-ish as well. Rap music's hard for me these days. I think it's changed a lot since the music that I used to listen to. So I appreciate artists that still are lyricists and they're not just kind of rapping to rap. I know that kind of sounds bad, but I feel like a lot of the songs that I listen to nowadays, I'm like, I don't even understand what the message is. So.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you know this about me or not, but I actually have a little bit of rap in my past as well. So the first CD I ever bought, Warren G, Regulate, the G-Funk era. Do you know any, is that over your head or is that before your time?
I can't say I've ever heard of that.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Just lost me some street cred right there. But beyond that, I don't know if I've ever told you that I was in a rap group in high school. Did you know that?
No kidding.
I was.
No, yeah. I had no idea.
It was a trio. We were called Whiteout.
Oh, Lord.
We wrote an album called Life in the Suburban Ghetto that had all these songs about our teachers and our friend group and our parents and like all the things that you'd probably rap about if you were a high school growing up in suburban Grand Rapids. And I would say it was a hit. I mean, we didn't sell any records, and there's only a couple left in the world in existence. I'm a hip-hop artist myself.
I feel like everyone should be able to listen to one of your songs.
I think not. I think I value my job too much, and I don't want that getting out there. But maybe I'll share some with you on the side.
Okay, nice. So. Nice.
Well, the second segment of Teacher People is our Tuesday trailer. This is a chance for you to bring to the table a movie, a TV show, or series that you're interested or you love watching, and I'll let you introduce what you chose for the episode.
Okay, so I really like action movies. I'm not really a chick flick type of person or sappy movies. I like something that I can kind of just sit and relax and watch, and I like the suspense of action movies, so I chose Transformers.
Okay, and this is like, there's a lot of Transformers movies, so
there
this
are.
Is not the cartoon version from the 80s, because
no.
I don't think you were around yet for that one. And this is the live action, the first of... How many are there nowadays?
Five.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the original Transformers.
Yes.
All right. Here's our trailer for Transformers.
Got a little surprise for you, son.
No, 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 Dad! Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, I am. You're not getting a Porsche.
Let me tell you something, son. A driver don't pick the cars. Mm-mm. Cars pick the driver. It's a mystical bond between man and machine.
What is this?
We're under attack!
We're facing war against a technological civilization far superior to our own. Our enemy can take any shape. They could be anywhere.
A robot, you know, like a super advanced robot. It's probably Japanese.
No, 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 no!
You have to get the cops. Trust me. Bring it!
All right, that was the trailer for Transformers, and for our listeners, that was probably just about 3 minutes of explosions and crashing noises and some yelling and screaming, but there was a lot of cool stuff going on screen there. So talk to us first about why Transformers. What is it about that movie or that movie series that you like, or what stands out to you about it?
I think for me it was very different than what I was used to, because I grew up in a really strict household, so Disney movies were about all I was allowed to watch. And so seeing something that was action and explosions and fighting was something that was different than like the Disney princess movies that I was used to watching growing up. So being able to watch Transformers as I got older, I'm always kind of a tomboy in my life. I've always have been. So I like watching action flicks because it's something that I wish I could do. Like, I wish I could be really cool like that and have a car that was a robot that could save lives. And so I don't know, I guess it just, I just like watching it.
Well, I like that Transformers is like your inappropriate outlet in the whole world. Like, that's pretty innocent still style of that expression. I'm curious, like you mentioned that there are a lot of movies you couldn't watch when you were younger or weren't allowed to watch. So are there some that stand out as like, you tell people you've never seen them and they can't believe that you've never seen them? Or are there some that like you just, you've always wanted to watch but weren't allowed to or don't feel right watching?
I can't recall any movies like in particular that I wasn't allowed to watch. Like any scary movie I wasn't allowed to watch. So even nowadays I can't watch scary movies because they're too scary. But basically any movie before, you know, like 2005, I haven't seen. So if you could like rattle off a really good movie, I probably haven't seen it. The most recent one that I have seen though is Forrest Gump. So I've seen that movie, but a lot of other ones I have not.
Okay, so like let's just do a couple here. Jurassic Park?
No. I've seen the newest one with Chris Pratt.
Okay. Star Wars?
I have seen Star Wars because my dad's like a really big Star Wars nerd. So I've seen Star Wars, but it wasn't until I was like way older and able to like handle it.
Okay. Rocky?
No.
What about Jaws?
No.
How about a couple Tom Hanks movies? Big?
Nope.
What about Apollo 13?
No.
No. I'm trying to think too. In Lit Film and Media, we watched like The Shawshank Redemption.
No.
How about some of those classics like The Godfather?
No.
Casablanca?
No.
Citizen Kane?
No.
How about like Wizard of Oz? Did that make it into the rotation when you were younger?
Oh my gosh. So the story about Wizard of Oz is I really liked the movie, but I would get really freaked out when the monkeys came. And so I would get nightmares for like weeks. So my parents took it away. And so I wasn't allowed to watch it anymore. But I liked it when I could watch it.
Okay. So you mentioned then that in place of some of these other movies, you watched a lot of Disney.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Disney movie of all time?
Well, now I feel like I'm partial. I have to say Moana because my husband's family is Polynesian, which I really do love Moana. But I think before that, just like thinking off the top of my head, I think one of my favorite childhood movies was George of the Jungle, which I don't really know why. I mean, I like monkeys and stuff, but I don't know if it's because he's like half naked and that was my like idea of, oh, I can watch this. But I don't really know. Yeah, I think George of the Jungle was like my favorite childhood movie. I would watch it on replay all the time.
Maybe it's some repressed memory of the Wizard of Oz monkeys, and that was your way of like working it out or something like that. Is find a more acceptable monkey movie.
That's what it was. Full circle, yeah.
Okay. So for our next segment, our Wednesday World, I always invite the guests to bring to our attention some sort of current event or topic that you've heard about or you're interested in or you're passionate about. And I actually don't know what you've selected, so this is going to be a surprise for me too. But I'll turn it over to you and you can describe it to us.
So I think as a history teacher, I'm always really careful about talking, like how I present myself with current events because it's something that's relevant in the classroom. And I think that it's so important that students develop their own opinion because I think that oftentimes they mirror other people's opinions. And so as a teacher, I try to be really conscious about how I present certain issues or how I talk about issues. So for today, I've chosen like a pretty neutral one just because I'm not really a huge fan of expressing my opinion on like global issues. But I think that climate change is something that is a huge problem or issue right now that needs to be addressed. And I think that it needs to be kind of like more at the forefront of the conversation, even though I think that people are taking strides and are trying to change that. I just think that change needs to start turning into action.
What are some of the actions that either you've heard about or you've thought about that you think would be doable and manageable and that you'd like to see happen within the next couple of years?
Well, I think really because it's such an issue right now, it really didn't become, I wouldn't say it became like a huge deal until about like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. I think that's when people really started the conversation about it. And I think that right now people are just in the earlier stages of bringing attention to it through their voice. And so I always tell my students in class, and we look at different historical examples, that change will happen with voice. It might not be immediate. It might take a while. But eventually, if your voice can become loud enough, then change will eventually ensue. And so I think that, you know, in the future, things just need to change. I think that, you know, we need to reduce our global emissions and we need to be more conscious about plastic and just like the little things. Like the little things add up, I think.
Was there a time for you or like an event that really turned you on to this topic or like really opened your eyes to the scale of the problem? Did it happen more gradually for you? Like how did this come on your radar personally?
We always recycled growing up, but I never really had a personal connection to it. I just knew, like, when we were done with our bottles, we put it in the recycling bin. And then I wouldn't really say that I recognized it until I got older. And I really started to see the world instead of just, like, Ypsilanti or my small little pictured life. I could see, like, this is what's going on in the world, and this is why it's a problem, and how does it impact people? So it took a while, but I think for me, the big shift was seeing how it's impacting people and the environment and the earth. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? Like, who are some people or some places that you know about or you've seen or experienced that you see experiencing the effects of that?
So I think, like, coastal cities, obviously you can see that, especially, like, in Australia. They're really dealing with that, the problems, and like, the Great Barrier Reef and all that other stuff. And Andrew's family, they're from Samoa. So they're also an island in the ocean. And I just think hearing stories about how every day they have to do beach cleanups because there's just all of these bottles and plastic and just waste that comes up on their shores. I just think that that's something that makes me sad because it might not be something that they're directly contributing, but they're directly impacted by the actions of others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting that you have that really personal connection to it. I know. For me, I'm going to drop a movie reference here, so I'm guessing you probably haven't seen it, but An Inconvenient Truth, did you ever hear about that film?
No.
That was a documentary by Al Gore, who's a former vice president, and climate change was basically his issue, his thing that he really wanted to push and put attention on. And I can remember watching that, I think, back in the day when Netflix sent DVDs to people's homes and had just checked it out because I'd heard a lot of people talking about it. And I think that was the moment for me that I realized what a big problem it was and how significant it was going to be in our world and what a big impact it was going to have on people. So I know that for me was the eye-opener. So how would you respond to people? Because I know that we can talk about ways to combat climate change or the best path forward, but there are people who essentially just deny that it's a problem and feel like that's overblown or that changes in climate are natural and a part of the everyday cycle of our planet. Have you had a chance to think through, like, when you hear that perspective, how do you respond to that?
I think for me, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And so while I can respect that, I also think that people need to look at how we have changed. And I think that climate does change over time, and there are cycles that we go through, and the earth goes through periods of getting warmer, cooler. But at the same time, if you look at our history and how climate has been impacted or has changed, we don't have the same industry that we did, you know, thousands of years ago. Like, things have changed, and we have modernized so quickly that we're not helping. We're contributing to the issue. And we're a very different world than we were then. So saying that, you know, climate change is just due to like the cycle. I don't think that's accurate because the cycle isn't consistent. Mm-hmm. We have changed so much, so the cycle is not the same.
Okay. Well, one of my favorite features, I read a newspaper every day, and one of the things I like that they do like once a week is they'll have just a little excerpt, one thing you can do to help combat climate change. And they're really practical things that like I found really easy to implement in my own life. So for instance, running my dishwasher instead of using water in the sink to wash dishes, and how much more efficient it is to run a dishwasher. Or little things like unplugging electronics when they're not in use, so you're not drawing extra energy that needs to be cultivated or generated in some kind of way. I'm curious for you, especially maybe as people living in Chelsea, Michigan, we might not say we're on the forefront of either contributing to the problem or helping solve the problem, but mm-hmm. do you feel like in your own life, do you take any sort of steps that are conscious ways to help respond to the issue, or is that something that you feel like you're comfortable leaving to politicians or lawmakers? What do you personally do in response to the issue?
I think we try to make small changes. We try to do what we can, and it's not anywhere near enough that for what we need to do, but we try. And we recycle at our house. We use gas instead of electric. So instead of cranking up our thermostat, we just turn our fireplace on. We just do like little things. We try to buy appliances that are more energy efficient. Like you suggested, like we turn the water off when we're trying to brush our teeth or take shorter showers. Like we just try to be a little bit more conscious about how we can conserve.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it can be easy to be cynical about problems in the world, especially large-scale ones like this. Generally speaking, would you say, are you hopeful that there's going to be a solution to this, or are you bracing for the worst? How do you feel about the next few decades going forward?
I would say I'm hopeful because it isn't just a country movement or a nationwide movement. It's a global movement. And with that kind of collectiveness and unification among people with a voice, I think that change will ensue for the better.
Great. Well, we're going to move into our fourth segment for the podcast, which is our Throwback Thursday, essentially just a story from your past or a memory that you feel like sharing with our listeners. And Ms. Dillon, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, so kind of as I talked about earlier in the podcast, I was a tomboy growing up, and I was really into mischief, especially in elementary school. I got in a lot of trouble then, and so one of the stories that I think I learned the most from, because I got in the most trouble for it, was I was in my fifth grade teacher's class, Mrs. Hayes, bless her heart. I still see her occasionally, and I apologize profusely for this. I had found out that she was deathly afraid of frogs. And so me being a fifth grader who liked to get into trouble thought that I should go out during recess and collect as many frogs as I could find and to let them go in her class. So I went out and I got 3 frogs at recess and I brought them back in her room and I let them go. And then we were sitting in like circle while she was reading a book. And I looked out of the corner of my eye, and I just saw like a little dust bunny pile just hopping across the floor because it had gotten under the cupboards. And next thing I know, Mrs. Hayes, who was probably, 5 foot, maybe 4'9", she was just a little petite woman, jumped on top of the table and is screaming. Meanwhile, this was before I realized that what I was doing was wrong. I was dying laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing ever until she said, go to the office. And by the time that the incident happened, from the time that I walked down to the office, my parents were sitting in the office. Mm-hmm. And I was not smiling anymore. It wasn't so funny then, but I love to get into trouble, and I would do that any way that I saw fit.
Wow. So what was your punishment then? What came of that?
From the school or from my parents?
Both.
Well, from the school, I wasn't allowed to go on the fifth grade class trip. Okay. So I was excluded from that.
And what was that trip?
They went on a boat tour. Wow. I don't even remember where it was. And then they went putt-putting.
Okay.
And I couldn't go. I had to stay home.
Was that hard?
Yeah, because all my friends were going, and I was really sad because I wanted to go too, and I wasn't fit to go. So I wasn't allowed to go, and then I was grounded. I don't know how long I was grounded for, but I think for my whole elementary school education, I was grounded. Uh-huh. So it really didn't matter.
Huh. That's interesting. So what are some other examples of this mischief that you were involved in as a youngster? Like, were you getting in fights with people? Were you a prank player? Was this mostly directed at your family or your friends or strangers? Like, what sort of mischief maker were you?
So, I guess you could say I was a little bit of a bully, and I'm not proud of it. I would just kind of boss people around, but it was always the boys. Because I would play sports with them at recess, and then they would come in and kind of, like, push me around. And I didn't really like that, so I would stand up for myself. And I got suspended one time because a kid stole my ring, and so I bit him. And so I got suspended for that, so that wasn't good either. I didn't like being pushed around, and I wasn't going to let people do that to me. And I think that the way that I handled it was wrong, and I know that now, but in the moment, if you're around, you know, a group of kids that are the same age as you, who are all male, like, you know, your tendencies are a little bit more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And so I would push people, I would tell them what exactly I thought, mm-hmm. and that didn't always go over well.
Okay, so we can just blame it on the boys.
Yeah, blame it on the influence. Boys. Yeah.
What turned it around for you? Like, was it this frog incident, or was it a talk you had with your parents, or did you just mature out of that? How did you turn that around?
I think it was definitely a little bit of both. Going into the office that final time with the frogs and seeing my parents sitting in there, that scared the living daylights out of me. And then being excluded from, like, classroom activities and from, you know, fun activities at the school, that wasn't fun either. And then going into middle school, I knew I needed to grow up. Like, it was a bigger scene. I was going to be around more people, and that wasn't who I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so I really changed it after fifth grade.
Do you think that now that you're on the other side of the equation and you're a teacher instead of a student, does this help you empathize with students who maybe still are into the mischief a little bit and like to try and get under people's skin or play pranks on people? Do you think in any way, like, this has given you a window into why they're doing what they're doing or given you an opportunity to better relate to them?
I think so. And I think, too, I like to have a personality in my class. So I think also, like, allowing students to see who I am as a person and that I can joke around and have fun occasionally, I think that's also nice because it's relatable to them. So I think I can understand where kids are coming from because there's always a root. There's mm-hmm. always, you know, something that is kind of stemming from that. So, yeah, I guess you could say my background in that mm-hmm. might help a little bit.
Well, as you were sharing this, I was trying to reflect, and my first thought was, wow, I wouldn't have expected this of you. You don't seem like the mischievous sort. But then the more I got to thinking about it, I know that I've actually experienced this firsthand. And I don't think you've fleshed this out of your system fully, because when we were in Europe, would you like to take the story over from
here? No, I'd love to hear it from your perspective.
Well, when we traveled to Europe with the school group, and that included Miss Woodruff and Miss Lutz and Mr. Schilt and Miss Woodruff's mother, Marie, mm-hmm. We were traveling, and Miss Woodruff asked explicitly that we didn't share personal information, specifically about her husband, Justin, with students on the trip. Because as teachers, we like to sometimes maintain a little bit of a boundary from our personal lives into our teaching lives. So I think there was a night when Miss Woodruff and a few other teachers had taken a good chunk of the students to go see Wicked, mm-hmm. the musical. And there were a handful of us, so you and I and Miss Bauermeister, Miss Woodruff's mother, and probably maybe 8 or 10 students that got on a train or a bus and headed back to our hotel. And while we were on the bus, Miss Woodruff's mom started spilling all these details about mm-hmm. how Miss Woodruff met her husband and what they were like when they first started dating. And I think there she was telling us about their homecoming dances yeah. and things like that. And you and I were sitting behind just like in disbelief that all of this was happening before our eyes and wondering if we should step in and stop it or mm-hmm. if we should allow it to continue. So we allowed it to continue, which yeah. is maybe a little bit of that mischievous influence that you had on me, because normally I would have stepped in and shut things down immediately. But we allowed Miss Woodruff to continue, or Miss Bauermeister. And then when we got back to the hotel, we had texted Miss Woodruff what had happened. And I think mm-hmm. we even took a video of it. And she was really upset, or maybe she wasn't. I didn't know her well enough at the time to know if she was really bothered by it or not. Mm-hmm. But eventually, it all came back to her confronting her mother and her mother being upset that someone had reported this to Miss Woodruff. And do you want to tell the rest of the story here?
Nope, you're doing a great job.
Well, I think how it ended up, I know this is a long-winded story, but basically Miss Woodruff's mother asked us point blank who is responsible for telling Miss Woodruff about what happened. And you threw me under the bus. You told her that it was all my idea and that you had nothing to do with it. And you tried to weasel your way out of the consequences and let me take the fall.
Well, okay. In my defense, we both took videos of Mrs. Bauermeister kind of spilling the beans to the kids. So we both were equally at fault. But the Bauermeisters scare me. Mm-hmm. So you were going to go down for that one just as much as I was.
Okay, well, I guess you still have a few kinks to work out from your childhood.
I guess so.
When you see some frogs hopping around your classroom next week, you'll know where that came from.
Nice.
All right, well, that brings us to our final segment of the podcast, which is our Friday question of the day. Just an open-ended question, whatever you'd like. And Miss Dillon, I'll turn it over to you to fire away.
Okay. So earlier, one of the questions was, you asked me, like, what is something that a lot of people don't know about me or maybe is a secret, and I told you that I like to sing. So this might seem kind of like a generic question, but I was just wondering if there is something on your bucket list that is really unexpected that people wouldn't expect that you wanted to accomplish.
That's a good question. I know that there are some things on my bucket list that I talk about, but they're probably expected. So mm-hmm. My number one item on my bucket list is that I want to see Michigan play in the Rose Bowl. And that's just being a Michigan football fan, and that's the tradition that I grew up my entire childhood. It seemed like every New Year's Day in the middle of the afternoon, you turn on the Rose Bowl and Michigan's playing somebody from the Pac-10, and it's sunny outside in California even though it's freezing in Michigan, and mm-hmm. that just was part of the tradition. And they haven't been to the Rose Bowl in over a decade, so it seems like they'll never get back there. But that is one that is my number one, and no one's surprised by that. A lot of my other bucket list items are sports related. Like, I would like to see Michigan win a football game in every Big Ten stadium, minus Rutgers and Maryland, because I don't acknowledge them as members of the Big Ten. And I'm doing fairly well. I still need to see them win in East Lansing and in Columbus, and I've never seen them win in Nebraska. But I think other than that, I've seen them win in every other Big Ten stadium, so that's a good thing. Outside of the realm of sports, I don't know that there are a ton of things that stand out immediately for me. I guess one thing that's coming to mind is adage that my dad used to say a lot of times. He would say that before you die in your lifetime, you should always try to do three things. And the three things were write a book, raise a child, and plant a tree. And I'm one for three on my dad's lessons, so sometimes I feel like, oh no, am I a failure, or am I not living up to his expectations? But I've also felt like in my own life I've found ways to do some of those things just in maybe a slightly different way. So obviously I don't have any children of my own, but I teach for a living, and I think in a lot of ways I have opportunities to, if not raise children, at least be an influence on children and be a part of their growing up. So I see that as, you know, like my alternate version of that. Or instead of writing a book, which maybe someday I might like to do still, I recorded original music and recorded two albums of my own music. So I thought that might be my own version of doing something like that. And I planted a tree as an elementary school child as part of Earth Day. So I've got that one covered. But I don't know, maybe someday, the writing the book in particular is the one that stands out, especially the older I get, the more I appreciate writing and the more I like to write. And I think if not a book, just having, I don't know, some writing be a part of my life down the road, I think that's something I really aspire to. I'm even not that old, but I'm old enough to start thinking about what life might have in store for me after teaching. And one of the things that I keep coming back to is just doing some kind of writing, being mm-hmm. a freelance writer or writing for a magazine or being a travel writer or something like that. That's always really just been something I've gravitated toward, especially as much as I love language and I think language is really interesting. That stands out as maybe a bucket list kind of thing. Make myself into the writer that I would like to be someday.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
What about you? Do you have a bucket list item that would surprise people?
I think one thing, I don't know if this would necessarily surprise people, but it's not a secret that I have a fear. And my biggest fear is mascots or like masks. So when I can't see people's face or when it's like covered with something, I like instantly shut down. So I would really like to overcome my fear. And I'm not really sure how to do that yet, but I feel like I've taken small strides. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would really like to overcome my fear. So that's obviously on my bucket list. And then in addition to like traveling, I can't say I want to jump out of a plane though. Mm-hmm. That's something, I feel like that's like a common one that a lot of people want to do, but I have no interest to do that.
So like if you're at a Chelsea football game and the bulldog comes around, are you turning and walking in the other direction?
Yeah. Even at the like pep rallies, if I'm up on the track and the little mascots are down running around on the center court, if they even come like near where I'm standing, I usually have to walk in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. It's just, I know it's so stupid because I don't like anything to hold me back from anything in life. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like my body just reacts. Like I start sweating instantly. My heart rate picks up. If they get close enough, I'll start crying. Like for example, I went to a basketball game when Andrew went to Saginaw Valley, and we were sitting in the student section and the Cardinal came over and sat right next to me, but I didn't know it. And I turned in the middle of the student section. I made a whole scene. I was bawling my eyes out. And that was like 4 years ago. It wasn't that long. Mm-hmm. But it was super embarrassing. So I kind of have tried to, since then I've tried to tell myself like little wins where you can, and eventually I'll overcome it.
That's really interesting. Well, I wonder, like, would you ever consider being in the bulldog mascot outfits? Like, maybe that could be a way to process, look at things from the other side.
You know, I'm not sure. I wouldn't be opposed to trying it, but mostly I think, like, I've really tried to think about, like, what is it that I'm so afraid of? And I think it's, like, the expressionless face, mm-hmm. or, like, how you can't see emotion, and I don't like that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. Well, I thought of one more bucket list item now that I've had a chance to process. There's a place in Grand Rapids called the Corner Bar, and they have a wall of fame for anyone who's eaten 12 hot dogs in one sitting. You get your name and a plaque up on the wall, and the entire place is decorated with the names of people who have eaten 12 hot dogs in one sitting. So that remains a bucket list item for me. You get like a 3-hour limit. I've talked to a lot of people about like the strategies of when you should eat and how fast and what to eat. So I'd like my name on the Corner Bar Wall of Fame, 12 hot dogs in one sitting.
You can do it.
I think so. Do you think that's something you could do?
I don't like hot dogs.
No. Okay. Well, then probably not.
Maybe if it was like cookies or something, maybe pizza, French fries. That'd be a good one. Mm-hmm. A French fry eating contest. Yeah. I could probably do that.
Well, I think a lot of us have probably eaten 12 cookies or slices of pizza in one sitting, but
that's true.
Okay. Well, something to work toward.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of episode 4 of Teacher People. I once again want to thank Ms. Dillon for all of your time and all the great stories you shared with us. And I know our students just love being around you, and I'm sure that they enjoyed hearing more about you as a person too. So thanks for sharing all of that with us today.
Thank you. And thank you again for having me.
All right. And we want to also thank our listeners. We appreciate your support. Tune in next month for episode 5 of Teacher People. And in the meantime, we just want to encourage you to remember that your teachers are people too. We'll see you next time.